time to get going with bike talk. What do we got on store today, Chris?
I don't know. I can't hear that music. So loud in my ears right now.
Well, let's bring it down.
It's good music, though. That's Motherbug. I think that name of that song is Mung Beans and Rice. Anyway, what we have in store today is we're going to have a really special guest here. Well, all our guests are really, really special, but this guy here, maybe a lot more people have heard about than some of our last guests, and that would be Ned Overend, and he's going to be talking to us from Durango, Colorado, and he's on the line waiting for us. But before we get started with Ned, what we'd like to talk about is just a few of his credentials leading up to where we're at right now in the year 2009. And Kurt did some research on the web here, and he sent some emails around as well as I, but he had a real interesting one because we were sending an email out that we're talking about Ned's illustrious career, and one of his friends got back to him on that. So I'll let Kurt take it from there.
Yeah, we chose one adjective to describe Ned's career, and it was illustrious, and a good friend of mine emailed me back, and he said, illustrious. Really, and the definition of illustrious was notably or brilliantly outstanding because of dignity or achievements or actions. And I replied back to him, well, definitely yes. I thought that was an appropriate description. And I've had the good fortune of knowing Ned for, a number of years, the last 15 or 20 years. And he's definitely probably one of the biggest icons, if not the biggest icon, in mountain biking around the world, not just in the U.S. And Ned is a guy that started his, I would say, his athletic career from looking back at his achievements as a runner and a triathlete and a road racer. But what most people know him for is his mountain biking. And both Chris and I were fortunate enough to see Ned in his heyday of mountain biking when he was the first ever crowned UCI world champion back in 1990 in Durango, and then throughout his time crushing younger foes in the mountain bike scene, in the Norba scene, and in the World Cup. And just a few of Ned's career highlights in addition to that 1990 UCI World Mountain Bike Championship, which was the first unified world championships. Prior to that, the Americans had their Norba World Championships and the Europeans had their European World Championships. And Ned also won two Norba World Championships prior to the Unified Worlds and one European World Championship. So he was able to throttle people around the country and around the globe. In addition to that, he won a number of World Cup individual events, Norba. And if people who are not familiar with what Norba is what was the National Off-Road Bicycling Association that's now under one umbrella of USA Cycling. And that was the governing body for mountain biking in the United States for a number of years. And Ned was, I would say, one of the heroes of that. And from his mountain biking, Ned, who retired in 96 from professional mountain biking, he moved on back to, I guess, where his roots were. As I see, he was 24th at the 1980 Hawaii Ironman Triathlon.
Yeah, wow. Yeah. How about that?
Pretty amazing, yeah.
Yeah, 1980.
Yeah, he moved on into Xterra Triathlon, and his first try was in 97. I think he was third there, or 96, and then second in 97. He went on to be a two-time world champion in the Xterra triathlons there, which are off-road triathlons. So enough about that. Let's get Ned on the air.
Yeah, let's get Ned on. Ned, how are you this afternoon?
Good. How are you guys doing?
We're doing great. We're over here in Nevada City. It's kind of warm outside, but clouds are overhead and look like it's going to rain. How are things in Durango, Colorado today?
It's pretty nice. It's probably mid-50s here today, which is unseasonably warm, but we might have some snow coming our way. We get our weather out of Southern California.
Gotcha.
But if it rains in L.A., we usually get it as snow a couple days later.
Kind of on the same latitude there, huh?
Yeah. But, man, I was in, Chris, that's where I talked to you, mm-hmm. a couple days ago in Grass Valley, and beautiful weather there. And I tell you, I was jealous because the trails in Durango are closed down till probably April.
That's what you were saying at the symposium.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And you guys, your trails were in perfect shape when I was out there.
You know, we've still got piles of snow in certain shaded spots around town, like at the SPD parking lot. There's still a six-foot-tall pile of snow out there. It's the most dirtiest, awful-looking snow you've seen, and then it leaks across the parking lot. And then up around various locations in Nevada County, or Nevada City, Grass Valley area, at least I can tell you firsthand, you know, this is about 3,500 feet to, you know, 3,000 to 3,500 feet kind of, you know, between Grass Valley and Nevada City. But it's like you were saying, though, how you know, it's what caught me at when you were speaking the other night at Union Hill School was, you know, that you were saying the communities are so similar, Durango and Nevada City, Grass Valley, and how you were jealous about our good weather. And I'll tell you what, that is almost like freak weather. I remember when we first moved up here in 2002, the first Christmas up here was just like that. And out where I live, it's this dusty, chalky soil, and I felt like I was in Baja. I felt like I was on the tip of Baja because it was so warm, just like it is this last week. So sometimes we have it, sometimes we don't. But at least we don't have, I don't know, how much snow do you got on the ground out there?
Well, it's been melting lately, but we got 42 inches in December, and then it's been unseasonably cold, so it stayed around for a long time. And I don't know, it's still a couple feet on the ground.
But you were on a ride this just before you got you on the phone here today.
Well, road ride.
Yeah, yeah.
Road ride, but even that's kind of sloppy. I mean, it's cleared off some roads, but you definitely get some spray from where the snow is melting across the road.
You know, and this is something we really talk a lot about on Bike Talk is, you know, we love to hear about everything that has to do with bikes, but one of our main concerns in Nevada County that we're trying to inspire people about is how was it out riding today? Were the cars kind to you out there? Because if you're in snow and you got a lot of slush on the ground, that's got to be rough. You got to have pretty much, you know, you look at cars that come off the hill from Tahoe and they just are dirty. So how is it out there riding on a day like today?
Well, we've got issues in Durango. You know, we have a ton of cyclists here. You know, and one of the main issues is with we have a Tuesday night ride series that's kind of gotten overgrown.
Mm-hmm.
And so we've made some motorists mad, and they take it out sometimes on every cyclist they see. Mm-hmm. You know, even if you're on the side of the road. You know, there's guys in pickups that'll go ahead and buzz you just because, you know, a month ago they passed some
exactly.
couple of cyclists with an attitude. So
postponed.
It's an issue. We've been fortunate that no one's been killed, but there's been people that have been hit by mirrors.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of intentional, you know.
You've got the same kind of vehicles out there that we have here, too. You've got Dodge Dualies with the horse trailers. Out in Durango.
Yeah.
So, and you got big mirrors out there, too. So it's kind of like a deferred retaliation.
And well, we got a lot of roads with really skinny shoulders.
Yeah. Yeah. Same here in Nevada County.
Well, I think that's a good point you made there, Ned, though, that people riding bicycles need to realize that their actions today could affect someone else down the road. And there's definitely enough room for everyone out there, but we all have to be respectful of everyone because if not... It could have ill effects because not everyone thinks before they act.
Yeah, good people ride bikes, you know. Just because someone had an altercation of some kind, whether it was intended or not intended, that's kind of like what we like to talk about here on Bike Talk as well. So, yeah, it's really great to hear from someone at your level who's, you know, world champion time and time again.
Well, I agree with you. You know, I mean, there's two sides to it. Mm-hmm. Of course, right? And there's some, you know, there's groups of riders that will ride with an attitude, so they don't move over as soon as they could, you know, even if the car has extra room to get around them. But, now, of course, what we're talking about is drivers that are retaliating by literally threatening our lives.
That's right.
Right? So, I mean, that's never justified.
No,
but the fact is that these people are kind of instigated or... They're irritated by, you know, groups of riders they see out that don't yield the right of way to the drivers. So,
yeah, it's going to be a two-way street, no pun intended. You know, it's kind of funny because to listen to Barack Obama, President Obama, speak yesterday at his inaugural speech, it was great because all he was talking about was everybody taking responsibility and not making excuses and not laying blame. And I'd love to see the same thing happen on the road out there between cars, bikes, and whoever else, is that you know, we're sharing the road. We're sharing this country. We're all connected as countrymen, and I wish people could just kind of see past the mistakes that we make out there, whether we're, you know, intended or not, and whether it's a person in a car going at a person on a bike or vice versa, because it goes both ways. You and I both know that. We've been out on the rides. We've seen people do crazy, stupid things that, you know, later on can reflect really, really poorly on others. So, you know, it's a two-way street, and yeah, so that's it's interesting to hear your take on that. Just as a kind of a question in numbers, what is the numbers on your Tuesday evening ride? How many people show up?
Well, we've actually split it up into, we've got three different groups, an A, a B, and a C.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not unusual to have, you know, 40 to 50 riders in each group.
Wow, that's 150.
There's only 15,000 people in Durango.
Right.
Right, so that's amazing to have rides that big.
That's a good ride.
In Durango, but
wow!
And you know the A ride. I mean, there's so many pros living here, right? I mean, it could be like Chris Wherry or, you know, Tom Danielson showed up. He's moved to Boulder, but he used to show up on those rides. We got Dan Bowman and Matt Shriver. So sometimes we'll have four or five different pro teams represented. Chris Wherry is here, so
yeah, you got everybody out there.
So the fast ride definitely gets wound up.
That's pretty amazing.
Yeah, it's interesting, too. You get in those situations, and I think that's when sometimes the egos kind of get in the way of common sense, and you can get yourself in a bad situation. Who takes kind of the lead on those rides? Do you notice, are there certain riders who kind of take the lead to make people realize if they're getting out of hand that it's something that could have an ill effect on everyone?
Well, it's good you mentioned that. You know, the B and C rides are much better controlled. And we do have guys on the A rides, but frankly, they get a little intimidated, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, it probably needs to be someone like, I should say, you know, me or Chris Wherry, someone that
veteran.
You know, feels like they can kind of rein the group in. But sometimes it's generally someone from the wheel club, and that's a little intimidating trying to tell that crowd what to do. But, you know, we've actually had a problem where these rides were sanctioned by the Durango Wheel Club.
Okay.
And next year, we're going to stop doing that because the guys who are, you know, on the board at the Wheel Club feel they're in danger of being sued, you know, for putting these rides on because they think it's inevitable that, you know, somebody will get hurt. So
That's sad.
So these rides, I mean, they'll continue to happen, but they won't be organized by the Wheel Club. You know, it won't be listed on the Wheel Club site about where the route is and everything. So they'll kind of go underground, but what we need to do is get more organized, even if it is going to be underground, and you know, try and get people to be more respectful of the cars.
Yeah, underground or old school, it's hard to classify it because we're just out there riding our bikes, but at the same time, everybody's got to be super responsible. I was going to say it. I'm going to take an opportunity at this point here to just kind of interject on our conversation and let people know that they're listening to KVMR 89.5 FM in the Nevada City area, 105.1 in Truckee, Tahoe. And you can listen to us and stream on the web at kvmr.org. And today we have Ned Overend on the air here, and this is Chris Kelly, and I have Kurt Stockton in the studio with me. And if you want to call in the studio and talk to Ned and just ask him questions about his career or whatever you want to talk bike about, the call-in number here at the studio is 530-265-9555 or 800-355-KVMR. That's 800-355-5867. And that said, you know, I got an email from Dorothy Wong down in Southern California, and if you're listening, Dorothy, I hope you'll call. So it looks like the phone's ringing a little bit here. And well, anyway, the next thing that I wanted to talk to you, I want to carry on. The thing that kind of segues us into this show is that just the sheer fact that it was by chance I bumped into you at Union School on Saturday, and you were doing a skills clinic, and that's something I wanted to talk about, is that you were out there doing a training session with the kids there and showing them some skills about how to ride and how to work on their bikes. They had a mechanics clinic after that, and what really struck me, Ned, that coming from a guy like you that really, really rang my bell, was when you were talking about, when you got up there to speak, the first few minutes of it were flat tires. And we had an episode three, I think it was, Bike Talk, that it was Tire Talk. And how you were talking about ownership on how to fix flats and how you know, how to take responsibility for that and mistakes and that thing. And I was wondering if you could just kind of elaborate and kind of reiterate what you were saying the other night and how you feel about how bike setup is when you're racing or riding or whatever.
Yeah, you bet, you bet. I mean, that was a great event they had at the Union School there, and amazing amount of young kids riding mountain bikes. I mean, you guys, it's not that big a community you guys are drawn from, yet that was a huge crowd of kids. So I think that probably speaks to how good your trails are, that you have that many kids out riding mountain bikes.
Yeah, people get out and personally maintain trails. We have trail work days out here, and a lot of people turn out. Of course, I haven't yet. I'm not going to go anywhere with that. But they won't let
I mentioned that to the kids. You know, kids a lot of times, you know, they just assume the trails are there. You know, they take it for granted.
Yeah.
And well, adults too, for that matter. But with kids, you know, I was trying to give them an idea if they're going to be, you know, mountain bikers, and whether they're racers or not. You know, with mountain biking, the setup of the bike is so important. Mm-hmm. I mean, flats. A ton of people have problems with flats. But the deal with the mountain bike is you can get so far back in, you know, in the back country where you don't have support. And so I'm trying to teach these kids early on that they need to embrace the mechanical side of the bike. That's, you know, you can't depend on, you know, if you need to have your derailleur adjusted, you know, you can't be taking it into the bike shop every time or counting on your dad to take care of it.
Yeah.
So you got to be able to figure out the basics. And even if you're a pro racer and you got a mechanic full time, you know, he's not going to be the guy that's out on the course riding the bike. You know,
when
you're riding out there, you're gonna have to be able to communicate what's wrong with it and test it and everything. So you really need to know the mechanical side yourself.
That's right, and a lot of people avoid that, and it's refreshing. It was so refreshing for me to hear you. It's that, like a true champion speaking about, hey, look, you know what? There are mistakes. People make excuses in the parking lot, and what there is mistakes. And what you need to do is own up to the mistakes and figure out how to overcome them, and that's what it's all about. And I was sitting there, and I'm thinking, what an analogy for life. What a parallel for life is what bike racing teaches a lot of people, like Kurt, like myself. I think it just made me a better person, having the experience of bike racing and just being on a bicycle and being self-sufficient. Looks like we've got a caller on the line. We've got two people on hold right now. So we'll take a caller number one here, Ned, if you want to answer some questions. All right.
You bet.
You're live on KVMR.
Yeah, this is a nostalgic question. And I appreciate what you guys do. It's terrific. Whatever happened to Missy Giovi?
Oh, good question. Ned, do you want to answer that? Or
well, I, you know, Missy Giovi, she retired from mountain bike racing. You know, before she wanted to, if I remember correctly, and it was because, you know, she had several concussions.
Yeah, that's what I heard, too.
And the doctors recommended, you know, I mean, she was still fast. She was still healthy. But the doctors recommend that she stop racing because, you know, concussions have a delayed effect on you. I think especially if you have multiple ones, you can end up with health issues later in life.
It's like a boxer.
Yeah.
You know.
And I know she was living in Santa Fe, and then I know she was in San Diego. And I haven't seen her lately. I haven't seen her at the bike show, so I'm not sure what she's involved in.
She sure did bring a lot to women's racing and mountain biking and downhill, didn't she?
She was a character, you know.
Yeah.
And one thing you had to appreciate about Missy Giovi, she was so passionate.
Yes.
Yeah, she was wild. I mean, it was pretty intense what she was doing, and it doesn't surprise me that injury would take her out of the game, but I was just curious if she was still in the game.
You know, Kurt, you raced on Yeti a year with her. She was your teammate for a year. Is that true, or were you and your brother on Yeti, and it was a different year?
No, actually, I did. Excuse me. You're correct. I did race a year with Missy on the Yeti team, I believe, in 1993. And, yeah, she definitely was a character, and Ned's point that she was passionate, yeah, it was unbelievable. She brought a whole new realm of, I would say, showmanship to mountain biking, which
indeed,
I don't think that it had before that. And there were Missy and I think another person who actually was a teammate of Ned, Sean Palmer, also brought that side to mountain biking. And I think that was both positive and negative in a number of ways. But
Yeah, Sean would have been your teammate over at Specialized there, Ned.
Yeah, but I
Yeah, it was very interesting having Sean on the team. And yeah, I think you're right. And I think in general it's positive.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know? Yeah. I mean, very much so. I think, you know, Misty brought a lot of attention. She got a lot of press. She was an interesting story. You know, so, and they would, those kind of people bring outside industry press into cycling. Like Sean Palmer was on the front of USA Today.
Really?
You know, because he's got tattoos all over his back, you know, and he was kind of a bad boy.
Yeah, totally a different look for the sport at that point in time. I remember that real well. We were at the X Games with our bike and our rider in 97 at Big Bear, where we were trucking down the face of that mountain at 72 miles an hour on our big bike. And, you know, Sean was there and a few of the other guys there were there. And they were a lot of fun to hang out with and be around. Yeah, so we have another caller on the line. Nope. Okay. So we get to keep talking about that kind of stuff. So, yeah, you know, that was what I heard, too, about Missy, though. She had was really fearful of another crash. And I'm so glad that, you know, she's just, had self-preservation kicked in and she's, you know, alive and well. Because downhill racing is a hard thing.
Got one more caller now.
All right. Let's take that caller.
Caller, you're live on the air.
Not so much a comment. I'm just I'm a disabled person.
Yeah.
And I ride a mobility scooter. I called in a little bit ago.
Is this Jim?
That. Huh?
Is this Jim?
Yeah, James. Yeah.
James, how are you? We remember you.
What I'm looking for, and it's an outside chance, is somebody might have something they could accommodate me for, but I'm looking for a trike bike.
Okay.
Because I don't have the balance to maintain, a two-wheel bike.
Yes.
And so I'm looking for the outside possibility of somebody having something that we can negotiate, affect a trade for.
Okay.
Cash or otherwise, you know, at a...
Sure, anybody out there listening that's listening to
so
James right now.
I need something that would be slash in price.
Yeah, and then Ned, you know, maybe that's one to kick around over there at Specialized, because the other part of Ned's job now, he's still a Specialized factory boy. He is integral in working over there in R&D. Maybe you should pitch something like that to them for the guys like James that are in mobility scooters and want to ride.
Okay, yeah, Specialized. They're always looking at the market. Things like trikes or recumbents and stuff, they're always kind of examining.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That'd be interesting to explore.
What opportunities
Can you give me a phone number?
So James has, we'll take your number. Yeah. You got it, Kurt? Go ahead.
No, can I have a phone number?
Oh, can you have a phone number? If you just email, the station info at KVMR, I'm sorry, BikeTalk at KVMR, that email will come to me, and I can give you numbers later.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
Okay, you bet. Hey, how's everybody been treating you out on the road there, James?
Oh, for the most part, pretty good, you know.
Yeah, we had a hauler at him last time, didn't we?
Huh?
We had a hauler at him last time, didn't we?
Yeah, that was good. And thank you for that.
You bet. Anytime. They're giving you a hard time. You call us up.
Okay.
All right.
Bye-bye.
All right. Take care.
See ya.
So, Ned, 1980, triathlon, Ironman. Dude. You were in the mix, 24th. Shoot.
Yeah, 24th. That would be impressive by today's standards because there's so many people do it. But believe me, in 1980, I'm not 24th. I was not the first woman.
There were women faster than you, huh?
I'm not even sure I was on the woman's podium.
Okay, but you were there and you represented. That's awesome. Do we have another call?
No, it's interesting. You know, I came from a running background.
Mm-hmm.
And I lived with Bob Babbitt, this guy who's was publisher of Competitor magazine.
I recognize the name.
Yeah, I know Bob.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, Kurt, you know him. And he was, we just happened to be roommates together. It was before triathlon had ever, you know, was just getting going.
Mm-hmm.
And I was in San Diego. I was going to San Diego State. And Bob said, you know, he read about the first Ironman, which was in, they did an article in Sports Illustrated on it.
Mm-hmm.
On it, and you know, I think the first one they probably had five guys or something, but so the second one they did, maybe there was 100 people or something.
Mm-hmm.
And but I was a runner at the time. I ran like in high school, and
you did cross country.
Yeah,
you know they got a really good cross country.
I hadn't really gotten into cycling or swimming, but
yeah,
pretty much by the time I got to the run after the swim and the cycle. I wasn't a runner anymore. I was a walker. So,
you know, Ned, it's ironic that you're a really great runner because at Nevada Union up here, the high school in town, they have an awesome cross-country team. I actually think they take home the medal every year or close to it. So between the fact they have a really great mountain bike team and then they have a cross-country team should just you know, make for a really amazing mountain bike athlete, you know, and it's probably one of the reasons why the school does so well when it competes on a state level. Do we have a caller online?
Chris, we do have a caller.
Okay, you're live on KVMR.
Hi. Years ago, I got a chance to ride. I lived in Durango and got a chance to ride on some of the rides, and Ned was there. And one thing that I'm sure he doesn't even remember it, but kind of dropped back after a couple rides because I just blow out. I was trying to push big gears.
Yeah.
And so this guy comes back, happened to be Ned, and he said, "Dude, just, you know, spin with me. I'll take your lead. Spin with me. It's going to be hard for a while." But that advice, instead of pushing the big gears, just increasing the RPMs.
Yeah.
Hey, I'm his age, and I'm still riding. So I just want to say thanks.
That's awesome. Yeah, that's the kind of guy Ned is.
That's
yeah.
Great. That's great to hear.
Yeah.
I appreciate it. It's interesting. You know, it brings up a good point, and that is, you know, trying to ride efficiently,
yeah.
Right? I mean, that's one of the great lessons a mountain biker can learn from road riding, I think. You know, is road riding is a lot of it is, you know, how to use the pack to be more efficient, to try and get a draft whenever you can.
Yeah, that's right.
You know, make the right moves. It's about strategy. And that's why road riding, I think, is invaluable. You know, all the good mountain bike racers, you know, spend a lot of time training on the road and
yeah.
in group situations and
for sure.
Racing.
Now, I'm sure you can you remember a time pretty well when there was a big division between mountain biking and road riding. It's funny you say now how all the top mountain bike racers ride on the road. But I'm sure, I mean, it wasn't that long ago. You probably remember that when they didn't ride on the road at all.
Yeah, it was. I'm a mountain biker, not a roadie. You know, and they had hairy legs and stuff, and it was funny because a bunch of us roadies would start showing up out at the mountain bike races with shaved legs and skin suits, and then we were just storming and beating them. And then all of a sudden it was like, wait a minute, what are these guys doing? And then I noticed that a lot of the guys that I was beating on mountain bikes, and I started out as a sport and then went expert, and I never went past that. But I just noticed the guys you were whooping that, you know, had seen you at the coffee house on your road bike on the way to a road bike ride, they'd all of a sudden, next thing after you beat them at a few races, whether, you know, they were three places behind you or whether you were on the podium, they're like, I got to figure out what this guy's doing. I'm going to get a road bike. And you see them getting road bikes and going out for road rides and then becoming a lot better out in the races.
Chris, we got another call, so
all right.
Let's take it.
Okay. You're live on KVMR.
Hey, guys. First, I want to tell you, I was just getting ready to go for a bike ride, and then I remembered your show. And gosh darn it, I'm here in my riding clothes and just listening. I mean, wow, terrible. I can't get out there because it's not raining yet.
Yeah.
But anyway, the other thing is I remember watching the local race here, what, 2 or 3 years ago you
two
were
years.
Here, Ned?
Yeah.
And
the Nevada City Classic.
And I was trying to pick you out, you know, and this guy rides by and he's got this mustache and this mole on his face. There he is. There he is. So for like 3 or 4 laps, I'm cheering for this guy. Go,
Ned.
Go, Ned. And some guy goes, he's not riding a Specialized, and he shaved his mustache, and he had that mole taken off. And I felt like a total idiot. Here
so
I
there's
am,
a lookalike out there.
There was a lookalike out there that day.
Wow.
I don't know if you remember seeing him or not. Probably not. He was behind you. But
I wonder if he painted the mole on.
He might have. I mean, he was smiling. I would just say, go, Ned, go. And he'd just be smiling. But it wasn't you then once my buddy... You know, corrected me, then started cheering for you. So
I like that. I like that mole personally. I don't know why you got it removed, Ned. I thought it was pretty cool.
The mustache and the mole, I mean, that was you for
yeah.
years and years.
It's a trademark.
Let you know that. So that was just my input, you guys.
Cool. Is this...
did I end up beating that guy with the
oh, you did. Yeah.
You look-alike?
Yeah. I'm pretty darn sure. You were up there. I mean, what'd you get? Like, you know, top 15 or so.
Well,
yeah, I think I was...
Okay, anyway, you...
Twice. It was like 5th or 6th well, one year, and then the next year I was 10th. It was kind of...
I can tell you for certain 2 years ago, because I was on the yellow moto behind you.
Yeah.
And I had Connie Strausser on the back of the moto, and you were about to fall off the breakaway. And Connie, you know, we don't usually talk to the riders in the race. We're there to offer neutral support. And Connie says, Ned, you get back in there, and you just keep on going. And I thought... well, hell, I'm going to start yelling at Ned, too. Come on, Ned, you could do this. Right. And you jumped right back on and stayed in the lead group. So I think you were, like, you were at least top 10.
Wow, wow. Yeah. Well, whatever it was, I think you were 50 at the time. Unbelievable. Anyway, yeah. You're awesome.
Yeah, and we hope Ned comes back for the Nevada City Classic year after year after year, because there's a lot of folks that would like to hang out with you.
You could
hang out with your kids at Union Hill School and see how they're progressing, too.
All right, guys. Thanks a lot.
Yeah,
thanks for your call. We got another caller waiting.
Hello, caller. You're live on KVMR.
Great. First of all, be careful of those moles. I just had mine cut off. I know it was Magnolia. What is that? Not Magnolia. It's Malignant.
Malignant.
Oh, boy.
Yeah, what do they call it?
Okay.
Melanoma. There we go.
Yeah.
As soon as my beard grows, you won't even see it. The other part is I really want to tell people that the writers themselves just love having people as participants on the Father Day. I have my regular corner that I've been going every year, and the writers are phenomenal. My goal, if I'm not hoarse, if I'm still hoarse after 3 days, I did my right job.
You did your job. That's awesome. Yeah, so, we're talking about the Nevada City Classic for anybody out there that doesn't know that.
It's been going on for how many years?
Well, it's going to be the 50th year in 2010, I believe. So we're at the 49th year. We're about at a 50-year anniversary.
That's amazing.
Almost.
It's the longest-running bike race in the nation, right?
And there's no reason to miss it. Not at all. And I remember when we had 10,000 people there, and we don't have as many, but it doesn't matter. The audience is phenomenal. Any writers out there, come on and participate.
Yeah, it's a great time.
Anyone who wants to see some fantastic racing and or just be part of a great thing is get ready, bring a lot of water or whatever you choose to do, usually a hat, and get ready to yell and scream for every single rider out there. This is not an easy ride, and if they can participate in that, they can do just about anything.
I know it's such a spectacular race. Ned, what's your feelings on the Nevada City Classic as far as what caliber event it is?
It's amazing.
Goes?
I mean, that's a hard... It's a hard event. I did it the first time was 1986, mm-hmm. and I was just racking my brain trying to think. It was a Canadian guy with a French name who won it, and Mike Engelman was second, and I was third. And I remember that year Darryl Price won the juniors.
Oh man,
Kurt, you might remember who that guy is.
Oh yeah, I know Darryl. Yeah, and Kurt knows Darryl.
Was it Gervais Rieux?
That's it.
Gervais.
That was a pretty good first guess. I actually raced with Gervais, I'm thinking, in 1987 on the 10-speed drive team. So.
Right. I think he was, I don't know if he was on 10-speed drive then or not, but he was a strong rider, but I only remember him for like a couple of years there.
Well, he raced for a few years. I think he finished up with the Evian team, and now he actually, he owns a bicycle company called Argon 18 up in Montreal. I don't know if you're familiar with that brand.
I've
heard of that. Nope.
Yeah, that's Gervais' company.
So, on the same note, I'm going to go ahead and I'll drop off this, but I do want to tell other riders that when the Father's Day race comes up, they have all different classes.
Oh, yeah.
And that anyone who has never participated before start teaming up and just, you don't even have to have a team. Just participate. It's a phenomenal race. It's just wonderful. If you don't ride or if your rider does not wish to compete, to come on over to the Nevada City Classic. It is phenomenal.
And I'll tell you, it comes along quicker than anybody knows. I mean, it's January right now, but it's going to be here in only 6 months. And so I'm already getting ready. That's how much I love the event.
It's awesome.
Yeah.
Thank you so much.
All right. Thank you.
Yeah, thanks.
Yeah, the Nevada City Classic, Ned, I remember that, riding around. I got one of the best jobs of the day. I've mentioned it before on the air here, and is to be on the yellow moto and to just help out wherever the referees need help. And it was great. It's so great to be in there mixing it up with the group. And my job is just to stay out of everybody's way who's trying to do business and to try to keep people off the course. But it was great because I'm right on the back of you like I'm riding with you. You know, all the fastest climbers, I'm on a BMW 1100, you know. And my job is to drink a bottle of water every race, you know, and to ride some VIPs on the back or to help do crowd control. And it's such an awesome sight. I'll tell you what, your races at the end of the day, or I'd say hop on the motorcycle for like the Masters race or something like that to get a few rides around the course next time you're up, because I had Jim Gentes on the back of my bike. He raced the Masters race 2 or 3 years ago, and I pulled into the pickup area right on the end of Pine Street in front of Friar Tuck's. And he goes, "Hey, that's a nice bike." And I go, "You want to ride?" And he goes, "Yeah." And I go, "Let's put this helmet on. Let's get going." So I put him on the back of the bike, and I rode him up right behind the pack. And we're cruising down Broad Street at 45, 50 miles an hour. And I lean over my head so he can look down at the speedometer. And he goes, "Man, this is awesome. I've never ridden on a motorcycle before, but this is great."
Yeah, that would be exciting on that course with that fast left-hand sweeper at the bottom.
Oh, and you should see it this year. They repaved Union Street down at the bottom. I was going into that corner at 40 miles an hour, easily, just lobbing the bike into there. I didn't have to do a lot of setup. It was so smooth. It was like a skateboard park, man. It was you just roll right into that turn and then out of turn two at 30 miles an hour and then up the hill. So I didn't get caught up with a lot of riders this year.
It's going to make that corner really interesting this year. It's always... As bumpy as it was in the past, it was always, you know, especially early on in the race to watch people, you know, negotiate it. But now with it being so fast and smooth,
oh man,
I think some people might be pushing it too hard this year.
Well, it's a lot less dangerous, though, because you're getting a lot of good hookup, and the tires they make now hardly anybody makes a bad tire. It looks like we lost that caller.
They didn't come again. Here we go.
Yeah.
It's interesting, you know, you mentioned Jim Gentis, which a lot of people probably don't recognize that name. He was the man who started Giro bike helmet.
That's right. He's the founder of Giro helmets.
Wow.
And sold it to Bell. I think that's probably one of the big success stories in the bicycle product industry.
I was actually friends with his brother on another level. I forget who he worked for, but I was friends with him through the business, and then met Jerry later. But yeah, he's the founder of Giro helmets, and he still gets out there healthy like you, and gets out and rides and races. Mm-hmm. We have a caller.
We do. All right. Caller, you're live on the air.
Hey, this is Dwayne over at Tour. How are you guys doing?
Hey, Dwayne, how you doing?
I'm good. Question for Ned. I didn't get to ask him this over at Union Hill the other day because the crowd was active and asking him plenty of stuff. But other than the old school method of dropping some aspirin, this is a training question to thin out the blood if we're going to altitude and we're not living or training at altitude, Ned. You know, I flew out last year to Denver the night before the Bob Cook Memorial Mount Evans Hill Climb and raced that with Ned. And obviously suffered because of the altitude. Did okay, but are there any newer tricks? And this is also, a question for all three of you guys, obviously. But anything that we're not aware of now as Masters racers, we are going out of state quite a bit this year, and we won't have the opportunity as people who work and train to acclimate properly. What else can we do other than aspirin?
I don't think there's any. Dwayne, how you doing? By the way,
how you doing?
Yeah, good. And tell. Is it Patrick? Tell him thanks for loaning me his bike. Let
oh, no problem at all.
Well, yeah, I appreciated that.
He was happy. Yeah.
I don't think there's any, at least I don't know of any secrets. Kurt, maybe you've got something. I think, you know, one of the important things is to stay hydrated, because people, even though they're not sweating that much at altitude, you're losing moisture through your breath and you're breathing more. And a lot of times people get dehydrated, and that certainly, you know, exacerbates the problem of altitude. But if you don't have 10 days to 2 weeks to acclimate a little bit, I'm not sure there's a lot you can do. I think it's important not to do too much the day before, you know, because you want to make sure you're really rested when you're going to be racing at altitude.
There's no replacement for that.
Yeah, I from my experience, definitely the hydration thing. But the biggest thing is to know your limitations. And if you know that you suffer at altitude, you maybe should try to choose some venues that aren't at altitude. I know for myself, I was okay up to about 5,000 feet. But beyond that, no, I suffer.
Yeah, and I never had trouble with altitude. But obviously, years off the bike before I started racing again. And I think this race started at, what, Ned, maybe 7,400 feet and topped out at 15,000 feet.
Man.
Fly in Friday night, and you have less than 12 hours before you're up there at the start the next morning.
Yeah, 14-something. It's the highest paved road in the country.
I think
14,600 feet or 500 feet, but and the pretty amazing.
You know, hydration works, but there are only so many times you can walk up the aisle in the airplane. So.
Well, even going to Mammoth to race at Mammoth, I remember getting up there at the lodge and, you know, loading up in the room and then walking up the stairs just to the lodge, you know, and it was pretty well trained, you know, at that point. And it was, you're just out of breath walking up the stairs, you know. But the funny thing, like, I think it's personal physiology, too, where, you know, some people do better at altitude. I came on at altitude. After day three of doing the road race up there, I was feeling stronger than ever. Whereas a lot of guys were just fading out, and that's kind of one of those things, like Kurt's saying, is some days you're just, you know, some places you just don't do well. But I don't know. I think like talking to Ned, Ned's well prepared, I think, and there's just no preparation for that. I mean, no replacement for that preparation to be just well rested, have plenty of miles under your belt, train at altitude. You know, I don't know. I think that's probably one of your best secrets, and that's probably why people. Move to Durango to train, because your elevation is good and high there, and you can get higher. Nevada County is pretty high too, because you can get up into some high country from here within, I don't know, 20 or 30 miles. You know, you're at 5,000, 7,000 maybe if you're lucky. I don't know.
Yeah, I mean that is good, and it's good to be able to ride up at high elevations. But I think what's most important is where you're sleeping.
Exactly.
You know, they say the best way to acclimate is to sleep high and train low.
There
right?
You go.
I mean, that's the best way to attain fitness. Durango is at 6,500 feet, so that's a good mid-level, because I think if you're living, say, like in Vail or higher, you know, if you're over 8,500 feet, I think it can be detrimental to your training.
It works
against
you. Yeah.
You'll have thick blood, but it's hard to recover from training rides, and you only have so much oxygen to tax your muscles, right? So you can only try so hard. I think what you end up is with less leg speed if you're training at too high an altitude.
Yeah.
Thanks. One thing about altitude I should mention is that you don't recover as quickly, right? Because there's you're taking in less oxygen. So people really need to pace themselves. Because if you pace yourself like you do on a normal ride, you know, on a ride you can bury yourself and then back off and you recover. But when you bury yourself, you know, when you go over your anaerobic threshold at altitude, it takes much longer before you recover to where you can get going again.
You know, that touches on a subject you were talking about the other night too, Ned, Saturday night, was preparation and how people travel to races, and how some riders go to Europe and can't do well or don't do well because they get psyched out. And a lot of it, like stage racing, I remember I learned real quick, you go to bed. You know, you go to bed, you eat some supper before dinner, and you get rested. Elaborate on that. You had some really good stuff you were saying about that.
Well, it's all different levels of stress,
yeah.
Right? I mean, there's, and you got to take all those stresses into account when you're training and racing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, for instance, the basic, you know, training principle is that you stress your body, you know, with intensity in workouts, and then you rest, and your body builds itself back stronger after the rest.
Yeah.
Right? So it's kind of a stress recovery ratio.
Well, that other thing you were talking about too is that riders get to a race course, they want to go check out the course, and they override the course, and they overtrain when they're at the course, and then they're completely fried because they're nervous and they're going riding. And I see that a lot. And I remember I got a handle on that too. I wouldn't go out and pre-ride the course. I'd ride it nice and easy, and I'd just take it easy. So when you were talking that religion the other night, I was like, there you go. I hope people are listening to that. But yeah,
people deceive themselves, you know, and I've done it myself. You go to a race course, and the first thing you want to do, you want to simulate going fast on the course. You know, all of a sudden you're thinking about the race, and you want to do this section fast and that section
pounding.
Fast.
Yeah.
Before you know it, you've used up so much energy that, you know, you've taken the edge off for the next day.
And it's all reserve too, because when you're going up to altitude, it's all you're running on reserves. You know, if you burn it up at practice rides.
Yeah, but the other, you had mentioned traveling, and what a lot of people don't realize, I mean, traveling is just another kind of stress. Right, you know,
correct.
You're traveling in this aluminum tube, you know, 25,000 feet in the air, you know, and you may not be using any energy, but you know, your brain is thinking, you know, how come we're not plummeting to the ground here?
Yeah, you still think about that every time you get in a plane?
I don't know. I pretty much have turned that off. You know, you hear about that crash where that plane landed in the Hudson River? That kind of brings it back.
Oh yeah. Man, yeah.
Those people were lucky.
Well, we've got about 10 minutes left on the show here, and I just want to interject again and let people know they're listening to KVMR 89.5 FM in Nevada City, California, 105.1 in the Truckee Tahoe area, and you can call us and talk to Ned or talk to any one of us and ask questions if you would like, and the call numbers are 530-265-9555 or 800-355-KVMR, 800-355-9555. 5867. So anyway, we're winding down to the last 10 minutes. We hope we get a few people calling in to talk to you. But I want to kind of divert our conversation back to what you're doing now. And it It really was a great thing to see you at Union Hill School. I keep saying that, but it was really overwhelmingly great because you were helping out the kids. You know, here you are. You're this veteran of the sport. You're a world champion time and time over, national champion, whatever you want to call it. You've been there. You've done that. You've been to some of the greatest races and some of the greatest places on the planet, racing and riding your bike and being at bike events. You work at Specialized now, and you're part of the team there as far as development and everything goes, and you get to travel around and inspire these young people, and you inspire everybody when you're there. Union Hill School, that was a great event, and the kids were there. Is that something that you do a lot across the country or across the globe?
No, I wouldn't say a lot, but, you know, I fit it in. I have all these. There's only so many times you can travel in a year, right?
That's right. There's only 52 weeks.
My job, I'll spend anywhere from 100 to 125 nights a year in hotel rooms.
Wow.
To kind of show you how it works out, right?
So yeah.
There's only so many events, so I incorporate events like that into other traveling dates. You know, and I was doing product meetings at Specialized the week before that.
Mm-hmm.
So, and that's also how I end up doing Nevada City Classic, you know, is if I'm out here doing product meetings and stuff like that, because I can't add any more travel dates. But I definitely try and, you know, we're sporting the local shop. Dwayne, you know, he does a great job of bicycle advocacy and
sure do.
Nevada City Classic and everything.
Yes.
But at the same time, Specialized is a major sponsor of the NorCal High School Mountain Bike League, you know, which you guys have the state championship team, right, in the
area.
Yeah,
that's right, yeah.
So and we think that that's a really important growth area because you take it, I mean, we had a bunch of middle school-age kids out there, mm-hmm. and I got to believe that, you know, the fact that you guys have a successful high school mountain bike team has these kids looking up to those older kids and getting in the sport. So
yeah, there's a reason for them to want to learn the skills on the bike because they know when they get to high school they're going to carry those skills on to the next level.
Yeah, and it's kind of an individual sport, but it's a team sport at the same time. You know, it's kind of like cross country, which is the endurance sport I got into. Mm-hmm. I liked it for the individual aspect, but there's definitely a team classification.
There definitely.
So you can kind of, you're doing your own sport, kind of, but at the same time, you're supporting a team. So it's a pretty cool combination.
Well, I'll tell you, next time you're in town, I hope it's when school is in session, because, and next time you are, you've got to come with me over to Steve Davis's program at the Bicycle Recycle Project, and we only got about 5 or so minutes with him on the last show because we missed the call in, I guess, at 1:30. But man, he's got a really neat program over there, and maybe Specialized want to get involved with that too, with tires and tubes and that type of product, because what he's doing right now is just like what Matt Fritzinger was doing when he began the High School Mountain Bike League. I remember seeing him at Royal Coffee in Oakland, and I'd talk to him from time to time, and yeah, I'm doing this thing. I'm helping out the kids at Berkeley High, kind of coaching them along to now what it is. And he was basically the founder of that whole thing, and I've seen how it's grown. I just shake my head in disbelief going, man, what an awesome job. So it's so cool to see that you're involved with getting out to the schools when you can. And, you know, out of 52 weeks out of the year, you know, two of those weeks are supposed to be holiday weeks, you know, Christmas and Thanksgiving or New Year's. So, you know, that's a lot of travel, and you can only travel so much. So it's so cool that you're able to tie it in because, you know, you're in Morgan Hill at a product meeting, and that is, what, 400 miles from Nevada City, right?
No, it's not that far. It's just down in San Jose.
That's right. I know where it is. You know, I'm thinking a round trip to Oakland because I just did one last week. That was 300 miles. So, but it's a one-way trip. One-way trip. It's a 200-mile trip to Morgan Hill from here.
It's not bad, though. I'm not complaining. I mean, that's too many days in the hotel rooms.
Of course you're not.
It's great to be able to get up, you know.
Of course you're not complaining. You're Ned Overend. Ned Overend never
okay,
complains.
So, that's, you know, in the morning I rode with the high school kids, and then in the afternoon we rode with the middle school kids. And
yeah, what'd you think of Empire Mine?
That's a pretty cool climb. That's great. You know, I mean, it's got some smooth sections, and then there's a few technical sections in there.
It's got a little bit of everything, huh?
Yeah, that's a great training climb.
Yeah, and as long as people, when they're out riding out there, they just observe the rules of the trail and have good etiquette, then that'll still be a privilege that we all have. And
well, you know, that loops right back to the issue of road riding we were talking about, where having etiquette while you're out on the road affects other riders. It's the same thing on the trail.
That's
right. You know, if you're out there on the trail and you scare a horse or you scare a hiker, then it's got repercussions because those people will make noise, and you know, there's enough issues with keeping trails open. So it's important for or to be polite to the other trail users.
Yeah, it's all about using kindness wherever you are and having a good state of mentality, and that's what you were definitely talking the other night, and that's what spoke to me. We're winding down for the last few minutes of Bike Talk. I think we're going to go out with a little music. We're going to say thank you to our sponsors, and our next show, I believe, is the 18th of February. And, Ned, that's you right. are always welcome on Bike Talk. If you ever want to come in and call in, or if you're in town and you want to sit in the studio with us, we'd love to have you here. And I hope that you're going to have a really big product meeting at Specialized right around Father's Day in June, because that's when the Classic is. And if you do, that you're going to hit us all up to show you a good time and make you part of our household and our families, because it's just great having you in town.
Yeah, I'd love to be up there again. Well, I appreciate you having me on the show. I've been listening to the podcast, and you got some great, interesting conversations on.
All right. Well, you know, spread the word throughout the industry, because I haven't been quite good enough about getting press releases out. I just started up with the benchmail.com mass email source. So if anybody wants to be on the show, which is probably a good time to plug this, if anybody wants to be reminded of the show or has questions, email in and I'll put you on my mail out, and we'll remind you the Monday prior the show and then the Wednesday morning of, and so that we don't miss the next Bike Talk. But definitely tell a friend. So, Ned, right. thanks a lot. And, Kurt, you want to say some words over here?
Yeah, thanks, Ned. It was nice talking to you, and hopefully I'll see you out at the on the road somewhere.
Yeah, Kurt, good talking to you. I didn't realize you went all the way back to 93, huh, with the Yeti team?
Oh, yeah. Yep.
Dang, the listeners probably don't realize that, you know, you've got, like, white hair and a long white beard. And
he actually does have some white hair over here.
More than got me. Confused as Santa Claus.
But,
yeah.
but it's GQ-looking white hair. You know?
All right. Well, thanks again.
Talking to you guys.
Ned, thanks a lot. All right.
You're welcome.
All right.
Well, that's Chris. That's about all our time for Bike Talk this week. You just heard Chris and Kurt talking to Ned Overend.
It goes so quickly. I can't believe it. We need, like, once a week Bike Talks. How about we move to, like, bi-weekly? So if people email in and say they love this show, especially with the pledge coming up, and they hit us up with a big old pledge, and you never